Mark Sanchez, this is Direct Impact, and these are some of the things that we are going to be talking about.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs.
How is Donald Trump going to be able to undo the damage of that very bad moment that is being replayed over and over again just about everywhere? It's an important question, so we're going to look at it. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, so listen, I think we should begin today with a situation in Ukraine. And this is an important distinction. I wanna do this and show it to you as it's being reported, not by us, but by Western news sources. In other words, the media that represents the countries that represent our U.S. allies, right? The U.S. allies, the countries like, for example, let's start here, Australia.
At a secret training camp in Ukraine's east, these conscript soldiers are preparing for battle.
Lend-lease, good gun.
What's most striking about the group is their age. They're in their 40s and 50s. Ukraine is running out of soldiers. In some battles, they're outnumbered 4-1. The military is recruiting whoever is able.
So again, that's Australian television. The network in Australia reporting that. So the situation for Ukraine militarily is not favorable, to say the very least. Combine that with the poll from the Wall Street Journal that we reported on earlier this week that found that the majority of Ukrainians now want their leaders to negotiate some kind of deal with the Russians right away, even if it means giving up territory. What that reporting shows is a narrative that is developing that Ukraine is on the brink of a turning point in this war because, Russia and the Kursk offensive, for example, is failing, and Russia's about to capture the biggest prize of all, the city of Pokrovsk. Now, here is a British professor, again, allies, a British professor at King's College of London, one of the most prestigious military institutions in the world, explaining why this move in Pokrovsk by the Russian changes everything.
This city is particularly important because it is, in a way, a logistic hub. Also, what is important to highlight is that the defensive lines behind Pokrovsk are not so strong. So there is concern that then Russian forces could advance more rapidly once they move beyond Pokrovsk.
So that's clear and important. There's another video now that I want to show you, because as I was studying the coverage, which is what I do before and as I start to prepare this show for us to be able to have something to talk about, I started noticing the evacuation of Pokrovsk. It's a big story that's going on right now, and the video from this is being shown all over the world. Something caught my eye, though. Here's a video that's being shown everywhere by Western news media.
Доброго дня. Евакуаційна група. Доброго дня. Їдемо на евакуацію.
Ти що забрали?
На, держи.
Держи рюкзак. Давай, руку пішли. Давай. Заходь. Оп. Оп, тихо, тихо, тихо. Оп, обережно. Так, ще. Все, бережи, це ви розмовляєте з бабушкою, евакуюйтесь. Впевнені? Може, з нами краще? Беремо дві сумочки та поїхали. Документи все взяли? Ну да, а пенсіонний?
Пенсіонний є,
все. Все взяли?
Все взяли.
Давайте, допоможу. Все, готові?
Готові.
Прошу. Поїхали.
Давай, не плач, все буде гарно.
Даренька, я так боюсь тебе оставити навсегда.
Можете і сюди, так.
А де мої сумки?
Ось стоять. Все тут, ось от. Все? Готові?
So we showed you that because it's sad, right? I mean, it's sad. And what I noticed, though, as I was watching that video, that I kept seeing the same video everywhere. Same people, same places, same schools, same officials, same BBC, NBC, CNN. That means it's kind of like pool video, and that all the Western media members were invited to one place to gather around and shoot the same people in the same location. So I checked the source on the original video, and I saw that that came from something called SES. I don't know what SES is, so I looked it up, and it turns out it's the State Emergency Service of Ukraine. I'm not saying that this is not a legitimate story. Of course it's a legitimate story when an entire city is being evacuated. What I'm saying is my antennas go up because I'm a journalist. It looks orchestrated because they want people to see that these poor people are being evacuated so they don't get caught up in the middle of the crossfire. Look, it's a horrible situation to leave and lose your home. But I ask myself as I'm watching this, right, if we're going to cover that and emphasize that and orchestrate the story, what about Gaza? I mean, these people are at least being asked to evacuate their homes. In Gaza, nobody's evacuating them. And then when they do evacuate them, they put them in a place where they're going to get bombed. So it's just sometimes good to compare and contrast. Joining me today, filling in for Manila, is a veteran war correspondent, expert on geopolitics, Gadi Francis. Gadi, would you like to weigh in on this?
Hello, Rick. Thank you for your antennas. It's so good to see the context, you know, as a journalist, because we saw a lot of that orchestrated kind of media coverage in Syria, Iraq, all over the Middle East. And thank you for putting out that very big flashlight for everyone to see that if they're not white or European, they are still humans. So in Gaza, yes, tents have been bombed in the past few days. Tents in Khan Yunis, displaced people were killed in their sleep. Over 60 families were buried. So, but still, it's the nature of us. While I was watching this video, I couldn't help but feel sad for this elderly woman.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, Ukraine was bullied into a war with an elder sister called Russia. It's a losing war, everybody knows, and it's just a matter of time until America stops bullying other people to in their rivalry with Russia. I mean, who cares? The price is being paid by Ukrainians, right?
That's the issue. And here's where it even gets worse. Are you ready? Because I want to show you something else about this war that's going on right now. Given the reporting that you and I just talked about, given what we just showed, it looks and sounds like Ukraine is about to be checkmated. If this were a game of chess, you know, the queen's in trouble, right? If that's the case, well, what's the next move for Ukraine and for the United States? This. Look at this. Look at this. Go ahead and put that up, Victor. The Guardian is now reporting that the UK has already given permission and the US is about to do the same for Ukraine to fire French and British-made cruise missiles into Russia. That we're about to bomb Russia. What? Unfortunately, the people of the United States know nothing about this because our media does not report such things. You would expect something like this would involve a congressional, if not a national referendum, by the people of the United States. After all, we're talking about bombing Russia. Or there's a possibility this is all a bluff and it's just negotiating leverage, since right now Ukraine has very little to negotiate from. I'm not sure. It's a dangerous game that somebody is playing. Gadi, weigh in.
Well, in the beginning of this war, we all knew that it's America trying to antagonize Russia and using Ukraine for it. Ukraine is the smaller nation. It's the weaker nation. And we saw Europe being dragged into all that. And this just reiterates that the Americans are not really paying from their own money or their own time. Europe is the actual continent paying for that. I don't think any victory over Russia is attainable, at least not from Ukraine. So whatever we hear in the news, whether they're going to use French missiles or otherwise, it's just bluffing, because on the ground, these people who are fighting are telling all the media that they don't have faith anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it would seem to me that someone's trying to negotiate Russia to the table, because the Kursk offensive or incursion is not working. And if we're going to get Russia and Ukraine to the table to negotiate some kind of peace deal, we need Russia to feel like they can suffer somehow. And a threat of cruise missiles is probably that tool that's being used. That's my analysis. You agree?
I absolutely agree. But the thing is that they weren't able to defeat Russia on any ground in that war, in that extended war. And I don't think Russia is the kind of nation that would be bullied into negotiations
yeah.
Like that, you know?
They've got an awful lot of nuclear warheads. As a matter of fact, if you look and Google this online, you'll find that they have more than any country in the United States. That's a threatening proposition, a scary proposition. Let's talk about this now, you and I, Gotti. We live in an era where it's not about the totality of any news story anymore. In fact, I'll give you an example. This recent presidential debate that we just saw in the United States, most people are not going to watch the entire debate. Not at all. But almost the entire world will see certain clips. That's the way people take in news nowadays, right? Even the people who don't normally watch news, they'll see it on TikTok or something. That is why this Haitians eat cats comment that came from the mouth of Mr. Trump, I believe, and a lot of people believe, is very damaging. Not only is the clip being played everywhere, so are the memes, you know, the things my kids watch the news on. And this reaction in real time. Watch this.
Talk about it because they're so embarrassed by it. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs.
What is your reaction to this clip, Gotti? I'm wondering, by the way, what was your reaction when you watched it, probably in real time, since you're a journalist, you probably watched the debate. What was your reaction in real time, and what do you think of what's being done with it since?
First of all, I feel sorry for Americans, that this is their choice. It's either Kamala or Donald Trump. This is my first sentiment. I really feel sorry for the American nation, the American dream. Number two, I mean... A little part of me was laughing, but then this is actually scary. If this is the level that a debate, a national presidential debate, is being held, I mean, really, it's frustrating and it's kind of scary about the future of America in general, don't you think?
Well, you know what I think? I think it was uncivilized, unintellectual,
to say the least.
Yeah, overly aggressive. And it
racist a little bit.
Yeah. And I get jealous sometimes when I watch other countries' leaders have these kinds of engagements, whether they're debates or other thing. And sure, people sometimes pop off. So do I, you know. I mean, I get mad. I act stupid. But it almost seemed like the whole thing was planned to be a show where aggressiveness and stupidity prevailed. And that's upsetting. So it's the current. It's the current MO of American politics.
Yeah, exactly. It's really sad to see. And at the same time, it's really sad to see that regardless of the whole massacre that's going on in the Middle East, which is being funded by the United States, that's really trivial for them, you know?
Didn't even come up. They didn't even talk about it. Oh, my goodness, with the billions of dollars and the thousands of lives that are being lost. All right, here's another one. Recently, a Jordanian citizen, apparently fed up with what he sees going on in Gaza, took it upon himself to attack Israeli soldiers. It happened at the Allenby Crossing, which this is a place where it goes from Jordan into the occupied territories, as most people who know the area would know. The Jordanian government has condemned what their citizen did, interestingly enough. But the people of Jordan tell their government, no, you're full of... We disagree with you. We like this guy. We like what he did. They disagree with their government, and they're now protesting on behalf of the guy who did this. Here's the video. It's important, right, to note as we're watching this video that, and I don't know if you know this, but many Jordanians were originally Palestinians who were then post-nationalized after the 1967 war. So let me bring Gotti back into this. I've always been confused about this relationship between Jordan and its king and all that and its and Israel, because it's always seemed to me like, you know, the Jordanian government is very beholding to the West, to Washington, and to Israel, while most of its people seem to think just the opposite. How does that relationship continue and prosper?
Well, in a nutshell, Rick, these are bodies, administrative bodies, that were made up by the colonial powers, by the West. Jordan was cut out, Palestine was cut out, Syria was cut out, and Lebanon was cut out less than 100 years ago by the actual colonizers. So you see an administrative body in Jordan, but the people there, yes, they are Palestinians, and they were pushed outside Palestine, and this shape was made by colonial powers. So Jordan was made that way by the same colonial powers that aided Zionism to take and captivate Palestine.
Hmm.
It's not uncommon for us to see that the royalty in Jordan is always in sync with the Western powers, because it is the reason why they are there. The reason why they are royalty over there is their alliance with the colonial powers that made up that shape.
What about the will of the people? What about the will of the people?
Well, the will of the people, I think Jordan is really ruled in a very secure and very hard intelligence way, because it is made that way, really. But the thing is that what they do not know, that regardless of the mock, regardless of the Mossad, regardless of the very tough dictatorship kind of ruling inside Jordan, it is inevitable that anything that happens in Palestine will erupt in Jordan, because it's the same people, it's directly geographically linked. And I think what we saw at Allenby Bridge, it's just the tip of the iceberg, and the protests are proof that it's just the tip of the iceberg. People do not care anymore, because you are being told, as a Jordanian every day, you are being told that you are complicit, that the Jordanian still have trade with the Israelis, that you are not helping your Palestinian brothers and sisters. So one way or the other, the people will erupt.
Wow. Gadi, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for sharing some of your wisdom and your reporting with us. We look forward to seeing you once again.
Thank you, Rick.
When we come back, is Ukraine at a turning point? Veteran war journalist Elijah Manier is going to be weighing in on this, weighing in on some of the implications of this momentum shift that we're seeing on the ground there. There he is. He'll join us soon. Stay right there. We'll be right back. I'd like to think all our guests are smart, but I'm joined now by one of the smartest ones, Elijah Manier. He's an expert in Middle East politics, and you can read his work at his website, ejmanier.com. By the way, that's spelled M-A-G-N-I-E-R, for those of you who don't speak French. Not that I do, by the way. But I'm not bad with Spanish. Thank you so much, Elijah, for joining us. I'm interested in what you think of this Guardian story that the UK has already approved it, and now the US might be telling Ukraine that it's okay to use cruise missiles to fire into Russia. What's your reaction to that?
Hello, Rick, and thank you for having me. It's a desperate situation, actually, because the war in Ukraine is over long ago. Russia controls more than 125,000 square kilometers in Ukrainian territory.
Hmm.
In April 2022, Ukraine was ready to sign a deal to stop the war. It was just at the first beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, stopped Zelensky, and since then, Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, doesn't have any decision, really. He is not the decision maker. In fact, the Americans, the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, the defense secretary, all the American officials told us that the 50 nations in Ramstein, Germany, are the one conducting the war. Now, since the beginning of the war, we've seen how the Americans try to supply the Ukrainians with lethal weapons, and gradually with weapons that they can reach Russia. So recently they talk about the F-16S fighters that are multi-role fighter jet capable of air-to-air combat and air-to-ground attack, which means that allow Ukraine to conduct offensive operation against Russia. So we also have seen drones supplied to Ukraine. We've seen long-range strike system, missiles. We've seen artillery, rocket system, anti-aircraft, anti-tank, everything we've seen supplied to Ukraine. And yet Ukraine is failing to to advance or to hold this ground at least, but is losing ground. And the last attack on Kursk, it's a disaster because, again, it's a tactical attack, which means that it was aimed to divert the attention of the Russian troop, which did not happen in a way that the Americans and NATO wanted. They are the one conducting the operation. On the contrary, the Russians are advancing and they're closing behind the Ukrainian troop that advance into Russian territory, and these will be completely eliminated or they will have to surrender.
Yeah, in fact, just to add a point to what you're saying, we've learned that just in the last 48 hours, the Russian military has taken back 7 to 8 different cities that were lost in that region, and they seem to be pretty much annihilating as they move forward, taking back more and more territory that was lost in that Kursk Oblast. But back to the point that I asked you about, I know that we've seen this before, and thank you for pointing out that in the past, the West has already, and the White House has signed off on using these weapons in Russia. But the word cruise missile seems to have more meaning. It seems to elicit more of a brazen act, to me anyway. Don't you think Joe Biden signing a piece of paper that says, yes, from now on, we will use cruise missiles, it's okay to use cruise missiles to fire into Russia, will have a more dangerous effect or not? Am I overthinking this?
Well, no, because they rely on the patience of President Vladimir Putin not to go to an extreme reaction, because he understands, as we understand, these are tactical moves. I mean, they are not going only to cruise missiles. They're going even to Al-Qaeda and asking the support of terrorist groups with the Ukrainian to attack Russia. These are tactical moves that they will not lead to the end of the war. On the contrary, everything the Americans are doing now is to wait and see who's going to win in the U.S. elections. And if the Democrats continue leading the U.S., it means they want to continue the war against Russia as long as Ukraine is ready to sacrifice itself for the glory of the U.S. And as your previous guest said, Gadi, the Europeans are under the skirt of the Americans, which means that we don't have a leverage, we don't have a say. At the first beginning, we said we don't want this war, and then we became involved, and we are more involved, really provoking Russia with cruise missiles. But we will continue provoking Russia as long as Russia is not taking drastic measures and answering very harshly on Ukraine.
3 minutes left, and I'm wondering, I got to share something with you. My son got married in Italy last summer, and I went there with my family, of course. And we traveled through a little bit of northern Italy, central Italy. We went through a part of Germany, I think parts of Austria. It was a wonderful time. And in that time, I got a chance to talk to a lot of Europeans. I found Europeans to be almost as hawkish, if not more so, than the United States when it comes to these affairs that you and I are talking about. Why is that?
There is a total blackout on the news in Europe. People are interested only in the taxes, in the inflation, in the price of goods, in the social security, in the what's going to happen next. But they're really not interested in geopolitics or in real politics. So this kind of covering the news and covering what's happening is convenient because the leaders in Europe are taking decisions that are incompatible with the interests of the European citizens. This is why it is in their interest to keep them in the dark.
That's why you hear people there say some of the things you hear from Americans, you know, China's sneaky, the Russians are bullies, the Iranians are all terrorists, so forth and so on, and so forth. It's because they don't hear conversations like the ones that you and I are having right now.
Their vocabulary is very poor. They repeat the same narrative of this president is sick, this is a psychopath, and Russia is responsible for what's happening. They have no idea what is the whole story behind the Americans really desperately wanting from Russia to move into Ukraine and to stop NATO from taking over all the countries around Russia. The only thing the French, for example, do remember is when Charles de Gaulle, when he was president, prevented NATO from having a base and kicked out the U.S. from France because he said, if the Americans have a base and they are independent, it means France is under the U.S. occupation. Hmm. Unfortunately, all of Europe today have U.S. bases, and we're all under U.S. occupation.
Elijah, you are such a pleasure to talk to. Thank you, my friend, for taking time to take us through this explanation and helping us try to understand why it is that that mentality exists, as it does in Europe. We'll see you again. We'll look forward to seeing you the next time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick, for having me. All the best.
That's our show. And remember to always be looking, as we say, outside your own boxes, because we always think and say repeatedly that truths do not live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.